Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. My guest today is Guy Needler. He was with us in April. People might recall that particular interview when we were talking about Guy's first book, The History of God. In the meantime, he's brought out another book called Beyond the Source, which we're naturally going to have a chat about. That's about it, I think, Guy. Welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Mike. I mean, I've got to say that Beyond the Source is actually book one of two. And the second part of this, which is probably twice the volume in terms of the content, I submitted to Dolores and Ozark Mountain Publishing during the July Transformation Conference in Arkansas, just a month and a half ago. So that's the two books should be out together, I would guess, probably around March next year. But this is part one of two, and it goes into some more information about our own source entity, what we fondly call our God, and God's peers. Certainly half of the source entities or the other gods that were created by the origin, the absolute.
Right. Now, for the benefit of anyone who's joining us for the first time, where you're concerned, I think it would be a good idea if you just told us about your background again and how this contact with the source entity and the origin came about.
Absolutely, no problem, Mike. It's in essence, I've been involved with psychic phenomena and psychic things and the learning of metaphysics from as long as I can remember. Certainly, I can think back to the age of four when I was getting involved with this sort of stuff and thinking along these lines. But in my sort of early teens, I got stuck into it in a really quite fundamental way. I was reading all sorts of different books at the time and experimenting with different things like astral travelling and meditation, etc. over those years. In fact, I was very heavy into meditation during my late teens. And it was during one of these meditations I was having in the morning that I was approached by what I could only classify at that point were four of my guides. And they were humanoid individuals with white robes on, they're smiling totally benevolently and totally lovingly. You know, they exuded love. And they said to me, in a way which was only they were only capable of doing, which was by some form of wasn't specifically telepathy, but it was something that included lots of other things as well. But the impression I gained was that what I was doing was right, what I was experimenting in was right, and everything I believed in and was working with was right, but it wasn't the right time. And really, from that point onwards, I took a back seat with my metaphysical experimentation and meditations and did what everybody else does, which is progress myself in my academic career and managed to get two master's degrees over the next few years and became a chartered engineer and met my wonderful wife, and we got married and bought a house and, you know, and got into middle management at work and all of these sort of normal, physical things that we all do as mankind. And then round about my late 30s, one of my college friends, or I guess you'd call it that, who I went and did one of my the earlier parts of my MBA with, said, "Oh, I'm going to do a Reiki class. Are you interested?" And I said, "Well, yeah, okay. It's a little bit metaphysical. I've still got interest in metaphysics. I'll go along." And then within basically a year, I was a Reiki master, having taken to using the energies quite quickly. Now, at that point in time, or just after that, I started to get involved with a lady who was giving me some energy healing because I was going through some pretty tough times at that point. And she said, "Oh, I'm just starting to do a class. We're going to do a first weekend just to show people what it's all about. It's sort of a suck it and see class to teach people that which I was taught by Barbara Brennan, because she was a first generation student of Barbara Brennan." And I said, "Okay, I'll go along." And after that weekend, I signed up to a 4-year commitment, which was a very heavy commitment, I have to say, because we had to go through all sorts of training, including being subject to our own therapies. Yeah, by that I mean we had to go away and be be under therapy ourselves to make sure we were clean when, before we could give the energetic therapies we were working with as a result of that. So that was a quite a heavy commitment, both financially and, of course, personally for 4 years. But during the same time as well, another friend who was also involved with the Reiki had moved to a place called Trollhättan in Sweden, and he was working for a motor company over there, which is currently struggling, but at the moment, at that point in time, it was Saab. And he'd only just moved over there. My wife and I decided we'd go over and see him, as he invited us to go and see him, and we'd have a cheap holiday. Anyway, unbeknownst to myself, his Reiki master said that he had to take us to a certain area within the woods and the nature walks of where he lived, because there was something special going to happen. So we went to Trollhättan, had this holiday, and we went along this walk along the river. And on this river walk, there was a lot of energy we felt. My fingers started to tingle, my arms started to tingle, my whole body started to tingle. In fact, my wife felt the energies, and my friend Graham also felt the energies. And it got stronger and stronger and stronger, and became almost overpowering. And there was a little like rock type island just off the shore, that was insulated from the shore because the water ran around it. I felt a great need to go and sit down there and meditate. So I did that, and my wife and my friend went up towards the suspension bridge and just sensed what was going on from there. During that 15, 20 minutes I was on that rock meditating, I received what I can only describe as being the most profound attunement I've ever received in my whole life. And I finished the meditation being totally stunned, not able to string two or three words together for not that day, but basically for the rest of the holiday. Mm. And I felt like I was really in tune with an awful lot of stuff. In fact, at one point, I thought I was in tune with those energies and those entities that were attuning me. Now, my wife and my friend, while they're observing this, they both picked up the energies and felt that I was being rewired and was able to contact other energies that were there. And from that point onwards, I was starting to get access to more and more information, more and more things. So when I was back in the UK and was starting to still work with the energy healing techniques that my instructor was teaching me, those based upon the Brennan healing science that Barbara Brennan had taught her, I was starting to go up above the frequencies, those frequencies that we were taught to use to affect healing on different auric layers and the different chakras. And I was able to go much further than those frequencies associated with those auric layers. And I remember getting quite a considerable telling off at one point for going well above those levels that I ought to have done. So that point onwards, I started to experience different things. Now, although within the class I capitulated and behaved myself and stayed within those frequency levels, outside of the class I started to experiment and meditate more and go further more. And some of the information I was picking up as a result of that, I started a journal. And it's that information which, over time, became the text for the book, The History of God. And has continued ever since in terms of the meditations and the information, has become Beyond the Source Book 1 and is the recently submitted Book 2. That's a potted history.
Right, yeah. And I'll add something that you probably would have done, that you get involved in such high frequencies that I know you actually practice Aikido as a means of grounding yourself.
Yes, it's Aikido. It's a Japanese martial art I've been practicing for 30 years now, and it's a very grounding thing. It keeps me, shall I say, on this level, as it were, and it makes me realise that what I'm doing is, I wouldn't say special, because everybody can do it with proper training, but it gives me a datum point from which to work with, and allows me to work with confidence with those higher frequencies without, in essence, getting lost and not being able to come back properly.
Right, that's fine. Thank you, Guy. We've got a picture now of what you're all about. At least I think we do. One or two questions. The void is mentioned quite often in your books, and I remember somewhere, and I'm not sure if this was in one of your earlier books, that some beings travel into the void. So what is the void exactly?
The void, it's, and this is something which is being tapped into by one or two individuals now, not just myself, but it's an area of the source entity, it's an area of our God, which is basically it itself, rather than that area, that part of itself that it's reserved for the structure of the multiverse. But it also, the void also includes that bit that's in between the structure of the multiverse, that area where those entities that it's created to maintain the multiverse for our use as incarnate and disincarnate entities who are using the multiverse for essentially for evolutionary work, is there to help them move around freely rather than getting involved with the with the energies associated with the inner structure, as it were. So the void itself is that part of the source entity, which is the rest of itself, basically. Although there's a second void beyond that, which is in essence that area of self awareness, that the origin, that entity that created our God and our and God's peers, is currently aware of. And there's another void beyond that, which is that area that it's not aware of, but no, in terms of its intimate awareness of it, but it knows it exists and knows that at some point it's going to have to move into it and start to experience that as well. So there's like three levels of void instantaneously. Mm-hmm. There's that which is part of our source entity that's not used for this to the multiverse. There's that which is in between the source entities, but is still the area of self-awareness of our source entity's creator. And there's that she's beyond the origin's awareness of understanding of self. So it's quite complicated and convoluted.
Right. Now, is one area of the void what some people call the unmanifest?
Yes. It would be unmanifest because it's not specifically used for anything from a creative perspective. So, although it's unmanifest, specifically from our source entity's perspective, it is like its body. It's unmanifest. It's uncreated. It's not doing a specific task other than being as energy associated with our source entity. So, if we keep the terminology of void as being immediate to our God, our source entity, then that's what it is. And if we just leave for the moment that which is outside of our source entity has been another progression of that, then we have to deal with that later, because I think it may be a bit too much for the listeners to understand that there's various different degrees of
right.
everything.
Right. So now you have these, I believe in total, seven universes that were created by the source entities, albeit by virtue of the origin creating them. Now, are the universes separated by the void, or is there an area of what you might call nothing?
The way I understand it, from what I've been told by a source entity, and I have to say, Mike, that the more I work with it, the more I get more clarity. So the information in the history of God is one level of understanding which takes us beyond that which we previously understood. And as I worked with the origin and the other source entities, with Beyond the Source, Book 1, and subsequently with Book 2, which has just been submitted for publication, I started to understand much more detail. It's almost like getting closer and closer to that which you're journeying towards. But on the way, you get different pairs of glasses to wear, so your focus changes. But to answer your question, there's essentially 12 universes that our source entity created. 12 full dimensions that our universe created. And each of those full dimensions has three subdimensional components to construct it. And each of those has got 12 frequency bands to inflate them. Apart from the first full for the dimension, which is in essence three sub-dimensional components, which still equals one dimension, and therefore those 12 frequencies also equal one. So the first 12 frequencies equals the first universe, which is where we are right now, because this is the lowest frequencies possible. So this is the basement, the foundation work. And then above that, every frequency level above that is a completely different simultaneous universe. So if we were to think about there are 11 times 36 frequencies plus one, then you start to understand that you've got 397 different simultaneous universes created by 408 frequency bands, which are all within the subdimensional components and the four dimensions. And all of this is there is to create a structure from which we can evolve into and ascend up the frequencies as a result, and therefore at some point gain re-communion with our source.
That is really staggering to hear that there are such a large number of universes. And from what you've said about, as far as I've got with your, with Beyond the Source, what you've said about the different universes in the sense that they are all the product, if that's the right word, of the source entity that's in control of them, presumably each one is entirely different to the other. Would that be correct, to your knowledge?
Yes. Each one is what I've been told to call a simultaneous universe, which exists in separation to the others, but is based upon the previous one. So, if you like, in terms of the fineness and therefore the contents that can be hidden and understood within that universe, there's a progression of fineness and a progression and an increase in detail the further up the frequencies one goes. But those are the simultaneous universes. Those are static universes based upon the structure of the multiverse. There's another complete different set of universes which are ever-growing and ever-subsiding, which are parallel universes, which are created by event space, which is something completely different. And it's based upon the opportunity for a decision to be made, whether we go down one route versus another route. And those create event spaces where we may move into a certain event space and do a certain thing with interface with certain individuals, experience certain things, and learn from the result of that, and subsequently evolve. But if there was a second choice to make, then that universe also starts to exist with a part of us that may have gone down that route, and we start to experience the other opportunities or aspects of that existence should we have gone down that route as well. So it's all that's a complete overlay to that which is created as a result of the static multiverse for our own evolutionary progression.
Do you think that in the course of our own evolution, that of necessity, we would visit many, many of those different universes? I mean, or are we required at one stage to visit everyone?
We elect to experience that which is within every one of them. As a result of our commitment to help our source entity evolve through our own evolutionary work. So we can choose to experience them all, or none at all, or part of them. In general, most of the entities that were created by the source entity have elected to experience all the aspects of those frequencies associated with and included and are part of those simultaneous universes. So, in essence, those entities who decide to work from the bottom upwards will experience everything they can do within each of those different simultaneous universes, including the potential to accelerate the personal evolutionary content through experiencing the lowest frequencies possible in the first full dimension, which is where we are right now as part of the physical universe.
Right, now you call this conglomeration of universes a multiverse. Is that the same as an omniverse?
Um, In my understanding, no. An omniverse is that which is a result of the environments or possible environments that are, if you like, a collection of the different environments that were created by the different source entities, plus that which is available to the origin as a result of its own understanding and working with its own structure, as it were, which is also mirrored by that which it created when it created the different source entities. So the omniverse would be all of the different multiverses of the different source entities, plus that understanding of self that the origin's got, and in terms of understanding its own structure.
Right. Okay. Fine.
Now, it's difficult to get. It's difficult to get one's head around this, but I mean, a lot of people consider an omniverse to be basically a multiverse, and they think of it that way. But a multiverse is a multiple of universes, but an omniverse is a multiple of multiverses.
Okay, and you're not saying there is a set number of universes to make a multiverse. It can be any number, presumably.
Absolutely, it's completely nested, and in essence, within a multiverse, there might be, for instance, as we've got with our own source entity, this 397. To my current understanding, and this might change in the future as I get more and more information, and then another source entity might only have three or four, or five, which is actually what the case is as I start to understand the different environments that have been created by the other source entities. I realise that some of them have done completely different work to that which was done by our source entity. Some of them have been very singular, some of them have been diverse in completely different ways in terms of how they've structured themselves and created environments for their own entities that they've constructed to occupy those environments as well. So it is completely, utterly variable.
Okay, now I think I've got my facts correct here. I read not too long ago that the Hubble telescope has actually picked up nebula about 8,000 light years away. I mean, we have no concept of that really, but you're talking about hundreds of universes. Presumably, if there was a super telescope, they could see into other universes. But how are we supposed to grasp what light years mean? I mean, it just sounds as though everything goes on forever and we would never reach the end of it.
Well, light year is a very, can I use the word, primitive way of understanding the distances that one can travel within the physical universe. By the way, that only includes that part of the physical universe that we can detect, because to my understanding, there are 12 full frequency bands that are associated with the physical universe, of which the physical body, that part of the human form which we see, is only occupies three of those frequency bands. The rest of the human form occupies 10 in total frequency bands, so there's another 7 of those which it occupies. Now, within those frequency bands that we don't see with our physical eyes, which is from frequency band 4 up to 12, there's a whole load more, if you want to call it planets, galaxies, nebulae, civilizations, etc., that exist within the physical universe. They're still physical. Those parts of those entities that were created by the source entity, our God, to experience the different universes, still has to have a part of itself, detach itself, and incarnate into a body that is part of it. So, for instance, there's a popular series of work done by a number of individuals right now to talk about information that they're channeling from the Arcturians or the Pleiadians or other races. Well, those races, although they're are a higher frequency compared to ourselves, they're still actually a physical vehicle that's used by a fully energetic entity to experience the low frequencies of the physical universe, albeit higher than where we are in terms of the frequencies of the physical universe. So in terms of how big the universe is, we've really got no particular idea of how big it is from a physical perspective. But in terms of a content perspective, we're not even there yet. We're not even in a position where we can begin to understand it. And if we think about that from a context of, well, that's one universe. What happens when we go up to the next universe? And it's all duplicated, but because it's a finer frequency or frequency set, there's more content there. Then we start to think, well, actually, we don't know anything at all. And right now, we're struggling to understand their own backyard, let alone that which is out there in the suburbs or in the rest of the country or in the rest of the world or the rest of the galaxy or the rest of the rest of the universe. We really don't understand anything at all right now.
I guess people must listen to these rather difficult concepts, really, new ones, and wonder if they really need to know. But I suppose it would be correct to say that these levels of information come out when some people are prepared, at least.
Yes. What's going on right now, Mark? Because there's lots and lots of populist talk about the ascension and what dates we're going to ascend and what's going to happen and all this sort of stuff. But we can't possibly ascend in the way people think we're going to ascend. And that's a very human condition, because individuals, spiritual individuals who pick up the information, they're picking it up from a ground zero perspective. And they say, oh, we're going to be at this particular level of this date. And they miss out the fact we've got to gradually accrue different frequencies to get to there. We've got to work at it. They think we're going to go from step one to step two in one movement, and actually we have to sort of go up there gradually and sustainably and robustly and in a repeatable fashion. But what happens is when we do move up the frequencies, and we are moving up the frequencies, and that level that we're supposed to be getting to on the 21st of the 12th, 2012, by the way, we've already reached it and surpassed it, and there's plenty of evidence to suggest we have done, and my understanding is we have actually passed that, results in us being able to access different things. One, those individuals who aren't supposed to be able to access the greater reality may well be able to and do access information from the greater reality, but in an isolated sense. And those are the individuals who invent certain things, and that you can see the rapid movement of technology in certain fields right now that is beyond expectation. That's a good example of what of the fact we are, in fact, rising up the frequencies. And the second piece of evidence is the number of individuals who are starting to become spontaneously aware and awake in various different levels of awakefulness. And I've seen people, friends of mine, who are, shall I say, previously totally and utterly not interested at all in anything to do with the spiritual world, who've been very materialistic, very focused on the physical, have suddenly experienced awakefulness in some way. For whatever reason, maybe their evolutionary content is such that at certain frequencies they will become aware and awake whilst incarnate. And they've suddenly become incarnate, and they've suddenly realised that all of this materialism and all this existence on Earth is nothing but a drama, you know, a puppet show, you know. And they've totally, you know, turned around from that which they were. Complete different personality change. And that is, again, another example of the fact that we are, in fact, rising up through the frequencies. So it's there, and we can see it all of the time, and it's happening on a regular basis. And there's an awful lot of individuals who are rising up the frequencies. And there's we are approaching a critical mass where there will be a shift for all those individuals, where they'll start to experience more and more of the higher frequencies and more aspects of the higher frequencies, and therefore they'll be able to experience that which is sort of currently hidden by the physical eyes, but will become available through the access of vision through the spiritual eye.
Do you think that when these souls reach that higher frequency, that they will, to all intents and purposes, disappear from view of those that are of the lower frequencies?
Yes, and this is happening right now, actually. during the workshops I teach, Mike, to teach people how to do what I do, to rise through frequencies and access information and communicate with entities on different levels, one of the things I say to them is, have you ever experienced being in, let's say, a shop or a pub or anywhere where there's no proper queuing system and you're waiting at the side of a counter for somebody to serve you? And I say, how many of you stood there and there's people come after you and they've been served before you? And they've said, yeah, I've experienced that all the time. I say, okay. And how many of you have been walking down the street and people have walked straight into you and they've not even seen you there, even though they've been looking at you? And I say, yeah, we've had that as well. I said, that's because you're at a higher frequency. In the second instance, they only realise you're there when they bump into you. You're not quite that high a frequency where your physical body is dissolved to the point where they can walk through you. And in the first instance, you only become visible to them when you start to become, shall I say, angry that we haven't been detected, we haven't been served yet. So we start to get angry, and the anger reduces our frequency content, and then we come into their perceptual range, as it were, because and then they go, oh, sorry, I didn't see you there, and that's the comment, and that's basically. So those individuals are going to start to disappear from those who are staying in the lower frequencies, but those individuals who are able to go into the higher frequencies will still be able to see those that are in the lower frequencies, but they'll also get access to seeing things which are available to them in the higher frequencies as well.
Yes, I think that fact has crept through when people have been discussing that sort of process. Now, evidently, at some stage, we would expect or we will return to the source, that is, to the source entity. When that happens, as far as you know, do we lose all of our memories? I mean, are they erased?
No. Well, there's two things. Well, I've got to explain it a bit. I've got to come back a bit from that. Because what happens is when a small part of the energies that are part of our true energetic self are used to experience existence in the incarnate, that energy undergoes two things. One, it undergoes a certain memory loss of that which it currently is, so that it can really, truly, holistically experience being in lower frequencies and all that is part of being in lower frequencies. But also, because of the lower frequencies, our bandwidth is reduced so much that we can't possibly access that which we truly are, because we don't have the bandwidth to communicate with ourselves anywhere near properly. So it's like a PC trying to communicate with everything that's on the World Wide Web concurrently. It wouldn't do it. It would just crash. Right. So we're cut off in essence. And this is what I'm getting to. So an ego is created. A separation is created, where that which is the spark of life, that which we call a soul, starts to consider itself as being the physical human body, rather than some part of something else. And that creates a conscious mind and a subconscious mind. So when the body demises and we return back to ourselves, our true energetic self, the conscious mind and the subconscious mind are dissolved totally, because they're part of that which doesn't exist, which is a separation from the greater part of us. But the information that's stored in it is always automatically transferred back to our greater self to become a larger memory set. So when our physical body dies, we start to have our memories absorbed back into that which we are, and we are, if you like, an entity which is augmented by a greater memory set which we've had in the past, but it's predominantly that which has been gained by the current memory set. Now, when we, in essence, work our way through the multiverse to experience, learn and evolve and pass that evolutionary content back onto the source entity, which incidentally passes it back onto its creator, the origin, we don't lose that evolutionary content, and neither does our source entity. We maintain it because that's what we've been given. We're individualized units of our source entity to help it understand the smaller aspect of itself that it couldn't possibly do itself. So we don't lose that at all. Right. But we also, because we're individualized units of itself, we don't lose our individuality, but we are able to go back into total communion, into total oneness with that which created us. And we do maintain our individuality from a thought process perspective, although our energies are part of the bigger being. Now, we don't lose those from our understanding, and we can later separate ourselves out again and experience other things as another round of evolutionary gathering opportunity later in our existence, should we wish to do so.
Okay, fine. You refer to our greater self, presumably the higher self by any other name. Is that actually our part of the source entity?
Yes. Actually, everything is part of the source entity, even the chairs that we're sitting on right now.
Right.
The multiverse. And in essence, although the physical body is part of that and is transient in its current, assembly of molecules, that part of us which is the soul, or that small part which has been projected into the physical body, which is part of our larger energetic self, our true energetic self, what some people refer to as the higher self, is that part that was created and individualized by the source entity to do detailed work, detailed evolutionary work in all the different frequencies available to us. So, yes, in essence, we are all God. We are all the source entity, and that which is around us is also part of it.
Well, if we sit quietly and meditate and believe, or perhaps we do have contact with our higher self, is that any different to you when you have contact with the source entity?
In essence, if we wanted to work with that connection more, then one could be able to work with that and move up and down the frequencies and access the various different entities that are working with the evolution on those different frequencies, and therefore the different simultaneous universes. And eventually, when one goes higher, one in fact can communicate with the source entity. And that's what I teach in the workshops, Mike. So in essence, the initial contact is with the higher self. It's progressing that meditative intention, if you want to call it that, beyond that which is our true energetic self, and project the consciousness further out past that which we are energetically into that which we are part of. If that explains it in a reasonable way, that's understandable.
Yes, fine, thank you. Well, the main point, really, of my question was simply, is the higher self part of the source entity, which you've said it is? Now, I seem to remember somewhere in your book that the source entity said that our experiences were needed for his, her evolution. Now, is that correct? Does the source entity still evolve?
Well, the source entity is still evolving, and more importantly, the origin is still evolving. That vast tract event of everythingness, if you want to call it that, that is also sentient in singularity, but wanted to experience itself in the minute detail, and therefore created the source entity to do that. So it in itself is evolving. So by default, our source entity and the other source entities, the other gods, the co-creators, or the true Elohim, if you want to call them that, are also evolving as well, as we are. So everything is evolving concurrently for the benefit of ourselves and our ultimate creator, the origin.
That's amazing, because we could have been forgiven, I think, for thinking that the origin was everything that ever was, is, and will be.
Yes, you know, and this is interesting, isn't it? Because my knowledge of the origin is such that, and it's very limited, I've got to say, although it's more than we've got currently, than we've previously had, but it's going a small way to understanding what's really out there. Oh, and by the way, the next book I'm writing is called The Origin Speaks, where I'm talking specifically with and have a complete unique and focused and dedicated dialogue with the origin to understand what it's all about.
Right.
Is that it's basically, it only recognises or knows of a minute fraction of 1% of itself. It's the way I try to explain this is that it just about knows its own backyard. Just. And if we were thinking about where we live in our houses and then we have our garden at the back, we just about know our own backyard. We start to have limited knowledge of the roads and the structure outside of our house, you know, the different roads that go down to the city that we live within. And then beyond that, we've got even limited understanding of that, which parts of the infrastructure of the country that we live in and the different roads that join the different cities. And then we know a bit even less about how we get from different countries to different countries, and then we know even less about the planet and how it's part of the solar system, then even less about the solar system and its interface with the galaxy, and even less with the galaxy and its interface with the physical universe. Well, our state of understanding of our physical universe is significantly more than the origin knows about its area of self-awareness. So it's in a conceptual way. So it's starting to try and understand itself. And then when it's done that, it'll progress onto the next level, which my understanding puts it at a multipulous, that's a multiple of a multiple of a multiple, bigger than it is an area of self-awareness that it currently is. So it's like, it's massive. So it starts,
it's almost frightening, Guy.
Yeah, it's not even bare. It's not even worth thinking about because we can't understand it. There's no point.
Right, I'll ask you a very simple question now. After all those, is it only in the lower frequencies that you can experience music such as we understand it?
Well, I'm going to have to ask higher. Experience on that. Okay, I'm being told that what we understand as being music is a mere percentage of that which is experienced when we are of a higher frequency. Music is clearly frequency of different sorts that are results of different resonations through playing of woodwind-based instruments, steel or brass wind instruments, guitars, plucking strings, and all those, cellos, violins, and all those sorts of things. And it's the manipulation of the resonant frequencies that creates that disturbs the molecular structure of the air, which creates the sound. But on top of that, there's energies that are created as well as a result of that, that we can't see or feel or hear with our five senses. So when we become more awakened, as it were, when we get more used to working with those higher frequencies, not only will music become what it is now, but it'll become much more than it is now. And there will be variations on music that are not only audible, but visual and conceptual and tactile and emotional and a whole host of other different senses that we don't even know about right now.
Right.
So, yeah, so in essence, the answer is yes, but what we experience as music is actually the very, very, very small part of that which could be experienced.
Yes, I think that sort of follows on very well, perhaps, with knowledge that we do have in the sense that I understand in the astral realms where people pass on to, or certainly what they call the summer land, that music does in fact also touch the frequencies of colour, and you get a colour display as well with it.
Yes, because in essence, colour is also frequency as well. If we look at the tics of the human eye is capable of detecting, and the brain is capable of deciphering that information that is relevant to the visual range, which is 400 nanometers to 700 nanometers. And below that, we've got the ultraviolet, and above that, we've got the infrared. And then well beyond that, we've got different things like telepathy and creativity and thought and all those sorts of different basic functions that are part of the lower energetic structure of the universe and therefore the multiverse. So, yeah, there'll be much more than just colour, but colour's a good example of the extra function that will be available to us when we rise to the frequencies, when we listen to our music.
Hmm. Fine. A friend of mine, to whom I passed on one of your books, who's been extremely interested in it, has asked me to ask you if you could describe, he's put very simply, because he's trying to understand the relationship between universes, dimensions, levels and frequencies, and how one fits inside the other. Could you cover all that fairly simply?
Yes.
Fine.
Okay, let's ignore our universe right now, because our universe is a composite universe of frequencies, subdimensional components, all creating one universe within a single full dimension. Let's forget that right now, because that's a bit confusing. But from the next level upwards, the next full dimension upwards, that dimension is constructed of three subdimensional components, of which each subdimensional component is inflated by 12 frequency bands. Each of those frequency bands equals a simultaneous universe that is capable of supporting everything that's in our universe and more in its own right. So, in essence, there are 12 frequency bands per subdimensional component. There's three subdimensional components per full dimension. So there's 36 full frequency bands to a full dimension. Within the lower one, now if we go back down to number one right now, which is where we are right now, we've got 12 frequency bands that are used to create a single universe, because those 12 frequency bands inflate three composite subdimensional components that create a single full dimension. So 1 divided into 3 equals 1, divided into 12 equals 1, whereas in above that it's 1 divided into 3 equals 3, divided into 12 equals 36. So it's that's the way it works. I don't know if that's simple enough, but in essence, our universe is composite because it's the foundation. It's the basement, if you want to call it that, and it's that universe which everything else is constructed from.
Right. Did I understand you to say that the 12 frequency bands can support everything that exists within it, like within that universe? Is that what you were implying?
In the physical universe, yes. But everything that's in our physical universe, including, in essence, those 9/12ths that we don't currently see or detect with our physical eyes or our machines or our detecting instruments, is also reproduced and more in the next frequency upwards, the 13th frequency, which is the first frequency, the first subdimensional component of the second full dimension, because of the fineness of the frequencies there. So whereas it takes 12 full frequency bands to create a universe in the lower frequencies, the next universe only needs one frequency band because of the fineness that's there. So, yeah, everything that we've got in our universe is constructed by those 12 frequency bands. But above our universe, we only need one frequency band to do exactly the same thing and more.
Okay, fine. I should be seeing my friend tomorrow. I should find out from him whether that covered what he was seeking. I suspect so. Now,
if he wants to, Mike, I can send him a PDF copy of a diagram that I've created over about 5 or 6 different pages to try to illustrate exactly what the multiverse is and the structure of the multiverse and how it works.
That would be great. Well, I'll send you along his email address then, and that would be lovely. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Now, this is probably going off a little bit of a tangent, but since the source entity, and I believe I've got this correct, created everything instantaneously, does that explain why we have these different forms, like the angelic realms, the Elohim, and types like that? I mean, does the source entity really say that he created all those instantly, or have they sort of come along afterwards?
My understanding is that the multiverse was created separately to the entities that were going to occupy it. That's recent knowledge, that is. That's only come out of the information from Beyond the Source Book 2, which currently, obviously, is being waited for publication. But in essence, there's two sets of entities. There's those entities which are there to evolve, those individualized units of the source entity, which is there to evolve. And there's another set of entities who have decided to stay as maintenance entities. We sometimes call them angels, we sometimes call them nature spirits, we sometimes call them leprechauns, those sorts of things. The Elohim is probably a misdirected, from my perspective, is a misdirected piece of terminology, because the Elohim actually are the co-creators, and the co-creators are, if you take it to its ultimate essence, all of the source entities, and nothing below that. Although there are groups of individuals that are and have been responsible for the creation of certain, shall I say, structures within the multiverse, specifically for accelerating the evolutionary opportunity of those who incarnated. And they have been sometimes, should I say, misrepresented and called the Elohim through our own ignorance, basically.
Yeah. Fine.
I'll add a bit more to that, Mike. The angelic realm, my understanding, is they're basically maintenance entities. They're there to make sure that the structure of the multiverse is maintained in tip-top condition, so that we can affect our own learning, our own experience learning evolution in the most effective way possible. And they have been seen to be taking part in physical modifications to the planet in the past, and there have been those individuals who've been lucky enough to see them. And depending upon how they could relate to what they've seen, they've described them as being balls of fire, burning bushes, glowing beings with wings, and there's a whole host of different ways of describing them. But
I suppose this is the problem. These higher entities can actually present themselves in whatever form they wish.
Yeah, I mean, they're not limited to form factor. They will adopt the form factor that they need to do the job that they're doing. And in essence, to adopt a physical form factor such as the human body would be extremely limited to them from that perspective. So they don't normally do that unless there's a need to work with a specific individual who is incarnate, who's chosen to work with one of these maintenance entities or angels or archangels, the higher sort of echelon of those, to effect certain change on the, if you like, the grassroots level whilst in an incarnate situation, although they're in a state where they probably don't understand or recognise that role for what they're here for in reality.
Okay, fine. Now, we're coming up to the end of our normal period for the programme. Can you give us any little peep into the new book that's coming along? Is there anything that you've learned that you can pass on to us that our listeners would find very interesting at this stage?
The book is, in essence, it goes into a dialogue that I've had with the first six of the 12 source entities that the Origin created. And it explains at a very high level some of the information that I've been able to gain from those source entities in specific and committed dialogue with them. Now, clearly the concepts I've been given have been given in a way which I can understand and therefore can pass on down to the rest of mankind in a way that can be understood without going totally over either of our heads. But in essence, he shows us some insights into what they've done themselves, whether they've created multiverses or not, whether they've created universes within multiverses or not, what types of entities they've created, what some of their form factors are, if they've got form factors, how they evolve, what they do to evolve, what structure of the universes they've got, if they've got a universal structure, do they have planets or not, as the case may be. Some of the entities, for instance, are based, they're almost universes in their own right in terms of what they can do, and they exist in a very interdependent, whilst being independent, way with each other. So with Source Entity 6's entities, for instance, the entities there are a completely different concept of understanding what an entity is, because each of the entities can interrelate with each other and work with each other in a way which is completely, utterly convoluted. So if you take one entity, for instance, it could be part of another entity, and that other entity could be a part of another entity, and whilst that entity is part of another entity, it could be working as a smaller part of that entity, which is a smaller part of the first entity. So right. It's completely and utterly, totally convoluted. It's difficult to describe in terms of how I can work with it right now, but certainly with Source Entity, I think Source Entity 2, I've got the book here now, by the way, so I'm going to flick through it because I've been that engrossed in book 2, I've started to forget the content of book 1. But for instance, in Source Entity 2, some of the entities there worked upon a cast-out principle where they all worked as groups of similar evolutionary content. And if one particular entity starts to be below their peer group in terms of evolution or above their peer group in terms of evolution, they'd be cast out totally. And they'd have to go and try and become part of another group where their evolutionary content was equal to what they'd got, or form a completely new group. There was other areas where Source Entity 3's frequencies were that high in comparison to what I've been useful and to what other entities have been useful within our multiverse. They were considered to be totally, utterly blissful. Source Entity 4 had got 24 dimensions with 2,322 different frequencies. And it had a universe that was almost donut-shaped with planets that were almost donut-shaped, and these donut-shaped planets have got different entities that have got different form factors, whether they existed within the void in the middle of this planet or on the surface of the planet or under the surface of the planet. And the form factors went from being massive butterfly-shaped form factors to gather up energies to smaller variants of that, where they used the energies to create shields around themselves so they could go beneath the surface of the planet. There's an awful lot here about this and about how uncontrolled thoughts can be a problem. Living cities and how different planets can end up being in societies themselves. They stick together, and there's entities that are working for the benefit of planets, bringing planets together to work in a society of planets. Bizarre, but nevertheless, that's what I've been picking up. So.
Yes, it all sounds very complicated. A little bit like our school systems, I think, where if people lag behind, they sometimes have to stay in the same year until they sort of qualify, as you might say.
Yes, absolutely. And as we get more and more aware and awake, as we rise to the frequencies, a lot more of this information will become more and more clearer, and we'll get more and more detail as a result as well.
I'm sure when we've increase the level of our consciousness and we move on with the process at the end of the year, perhaps we will be more able to comprehend these type of things a little bit more easily. I'm sure we will. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yes, what do you want to say, Guy?
I was going to say, I'm sure we will. In actual fact, it's probably not. It's best not to focus on the end of the year. It's best to just keep an eye open and see what's happening around us right now, because the ascension process is happening all around us right now.
Oh, yes, yes, indeed. I mean, it's been going on for quite a while. I'm not sure if it was in your book that I read it, but it, to all intents and purposes, it really took off with the harmonic convergence in the 80s.
Yes, it's been going for certainly 40 years, if not 50 years. But the time we started to see things happening was probably around the 80s, yes, I'd agree with that. Things started to happen big time then, without doubt.
Yeah. Yes, well, I'd like to think that with the type of messages that are going out, people are understanding that the process of ascension is ongoing. As you said, it's happening very much now. It seems to be picking up all the time, increasing in speed. So we've got a lot to look forward to. Anyway, guys, it's been very nice to have you back on the programme. I've enjoyed it. I expect it's probably a little bit deep for some people, but I would like to think that you always get something out of these type of conversations. So you take, really, I suppose, what you can handle, and that'll be it.
Absolutely. And one of the things I will say for people out there is if there's anything they can't understand, then don't try and understand it. Just treat it as a story, and at some level they will absorb it anyway, naturally.
Yeah. Yes, we've got plenty of time, haven't we, to absorb it all. I mean, if life is infinite, why are we worried?
Exactly.
Right. Well, thank you, Guy. It's been very nice to talk to you again. And I wish you all the best with your next book. How long will it be, do you think, before that one will be ready?
I think it's going to be at least 12 months right now, although I've got another small book which I'm working on, which is a little bridging book that'll help people. It's called Avoiding Karma, A Guide to Assuring Personal Ascension. And it's some of the information that's coming out from the source sense is absolutely spot on in terms of the things that we need to do to make sure
we
don't
get
karma.
Sounds excellent. Yes. Thanks again, Guy. Nice to speak with you.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure, as always. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, friends, that was certainly a bit different to normal. Now, next week, I've got James O'Conn. He spent 40 years investigating the technological advances of the Maya engineers, and he's written a book about it, and naturally we are going to discuss that. That should be interesting. I think most people know something about the Mayans. So thank you for being with me today, and I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.